third case. Looks like counsel are there. This is 21-2034 Swanson versus Griffin. And for the appellant is Mr. Shaner.
Good afternoon or good morning, Your Honor. Steve Shaner on behalf of appellant Foy Griffin. The case before the court today involves the principle of qualified immunity. Qualified immunity is a familiar principle to this court. It's been well litigated in the 10th Circuit, other circuits around the country, as well as the United States Supreme Court. But this familiar principle of qualified immunity arises in a new landscape and in a new frontier in this case, which is that of digital and social media. It's an area where technology is continuing to evolve, and the courts are working diligently to try and navigate jurisprudence to keep up with it. To provide the court with a little bit of context with regard to this case, the appellant defendant here, Foy Griffin, is an individual that had an individual profile on Facebook. That's distinguished from a Facebook page. Facebook pages are typically to get the name brand out, to get information out, advertised, whereas individual profiles are for individual use. And that's the type of account that existed in this case. He had an individual profile. He did not identify himself as a county commissioner. He did not invite any type of commentary. He was identified as a private citizen. So it's the same type of account as any individual would have.
Is your argument categorical? In other words, that there would never be any First Amendment protections that would attach to a private Facebook account?
I don't believe it is categorical. I think that you have to, in part of the analysis, you have to make a distinction between an individual private account and a Facebook page. But I can conceive of situations where someone has created an individual profile, but identifies themselves in their official capacity, utilizes that solely for the purpose of communicating with regard to the elements of their official capacity. And in those instances, I think under the jurisprudence, that could be interpreted to create a public forum and therefore invoke the privileges and the protections of the First Amendment. So I don't believe it's a categorical argument.
So you're saying it's sort of a fact-bound determination, and it really depends on the way a individual account is being used?
I do. I think it is a factual determination as to how the account is set up, how the account is used and maintained. If you look at the case that the court relied upon, the Knight case, which has been vacated, but in that case, that they used to extrapolate, that was a case where President Trump is using his Twitter account. He identifies himself as the 45th president of the United States, and he's using that account exclusively to get his agenda, his press releases out. He's using that in what former presidents would have used, a press conference or a sit down with someone like Diane Sawyer. He's using that because he didn't feel like he got fair treatment. So he's using that vehicle exclusively to get his information out about his agenda, his administration, his politics. I think that's a different situation than in here, where the court notes in its own opinion that it's undisputed that, and this is at 131 of the appendix, the district court states it is undisputed that the defendant Griffin's Facebook page is an individual profile, not a government page. Defendant Griffin does not refer to himself as a county commissioner in the about section of the personal Facebook page, and there is no written invitation to submit comments regarding public business.
Are you arguing, I mean, this all sounds like an argument that there's no violation for purposes of qualified immunity, but you're also arguing that even if it is a violation, it's not clearly established. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And in fact, I think the clearly established is where the real error occurs here, because regardless, I mean, we don't think that this invokes a public forum and that there's not a constitutional violation. But even assuming that that you think that the court got that right, there's not, it's not clearly established. That the case law is very consistent that in order to have a right that's clearly established, you need to have a 10th Circuit case on point, a United States Supreme Court case on point, or in the absence of those two, you need to have a body of law. I think they talk in many cases about a robust consensus of opinion amongst all the circuits, such that it's beyond debate. Some cases say it's undisputable, or the unlawful conduct is known to everyone but the plainly incompetent or those who intentionally violate the law. And I think that's the term that is used in the White versus Polly case, which is a 2017 Supreme Court case. In this case, the court cited to no 10th Circuit case on point because there isn't a 10th Circuit case on point. Court didn't cite to any United States Supreme Court case on point because there isn't any Supreme Court case on point. And the court relied singly upon a Fourth Circuit case. I think it was the Davison case, which we think is distinguishable on the facts. But even if that case were on all fours, a singular case within the Fourth Circuit isn't tantamount to a robust consensus of authority amongst the circuits. So we don't think that right was clearly established. And so the plaintiff could not meet the second prong of the
qualified immunity. Mr. Shaner, is the board is a multi-member entity, correct?
Correct. It's a county commission.
And so there are multiple elected officials. Is it more akin to an executive type function in your county, or is it more like a legislative body?
I think it's sort of a quasi of both. I think it's probably more of an executive type of body, but I do think that they deal with county ordinances and so it's
well. Is there anything Mr. Griffin could do unilaterally as far as governing the county without the approval and votes of his other commissioners?
No, I think that the body acts as a body corporate, and he's simply a member.
Yeah, so I'm just wondering, how we attribute state action to one member of a multi-member legislative organization when he doesn't have the power to act unilaterally.
I think you've hit on an important point. I don't think there is state action here. And his action in blocking someone is an individual action on an individual profile of an individual Facebook account. But we've raised this in a qualified immunity on a motion to dismiss. So we have to take the allegations in the complaint as the plaintiff has pled that he is acting in his official capacity. So we haven't argued that point. But I think that's an important point made by Your Honor. I think that what the court did, the district court did in regards to the clearly established that I think is obvious error is highlighted by the White versus Polly case. It's at 137 Supreme Court 548. And in that case, the court in 2017 again takes up the issue of qualified immunity. And in doing so, the court says at page 551, in the last 5 years, this court has issued a number of opinions reversing federal courts in qualified immunity cases. Today, at page 552, today it again is necessary to reiterate the longstanding principle that clearly established law should not be defined at high level of generality. As this court has explained decades ago, the clearly established law must be particularized to the facts of the case. And the White case is in the context of an excessive force where there is just a plethora of cases over decades and decades. And still, even in this case, they're finding in the particular facts of that circumstance of that case that the law is not clearly established. And the court makes the comment. The case is a unique, the majority recognize that this case presents a unique set of facts and circumstances. This alone should have been important indication to the majority that White's conduct did not violate a clearly established right. So what the court is saying is that in the context of determining clearly established, you have to look at the particular facts of the case. And what that would require in this case is to find a case in the Tenth Circuit, the United States, or within the circuits that holds that a public official that has a private Facebook account where he doesn't identify himself in any official capacity, doesn't invite comment, identifies himself as a private person, not a public person, that in blocking someone from posting a comment and deleting their comments on his personal profile, that violates a First Amendment right and it's unlawful. And there's no such case that stands for that proposition, not in the Tenth Circuit, not in the United States, and certainly not within the circuits. In fact, in our brief, we've done a string cite of a number of cases, which we did so for the fact of establishing the cases are all over the place right now. There is no consensus. And I think that when in the Biden case, when the court vacated the Knight case as moot, that's what Justice Thomas was touching upon, because he said in this age of digital media, it's anything but clear. And he goes on to talk about, I don't know how we're going to analyze this. Are we going to analyze this consistent with like common carriers? The court's not even clear on how they would approach it. So this right wasn't clearly established. They can't prove that it was fairly established. And so qualified immunity should have been granted. I'd like to reserve, if the court doesn't have any questions, I'd like to reserve a few minutes for rebuttal.
Does Otero County have a official Facebook account for the commissioners?
You know, I don't know that.
And what about the other commissioners? Do they have private accounts? Okay, let's hear from Mr. Dunn.
Good morning, members of the panel. Blair Dunn on behalf of the appellee, Jeff Swanson. I think where I would like to begin is a discussion about whether or not the fact pattern in this case is actually unique. To that end,
it's not just whether it's unique, it's whether the Supreme Court or this circuit has issued a decision that is factually on fours, factually similar, that is particularized to these. And you didn't cite any.
Your Honor, that's getting to my larger point about the context and the whether or not these facts are actually unique. I don't think that the court would dispute that when it comes to a public official conducting a town hall to talk about town business in a setting other than social media, and then kick somebody out of the meeting because of what they said about how that public official was doing their job, that there wouldn't be a First Amendment injury. So we really are talking about whether or not it is a Facebook or a social media type of inquiry as to whether or not there is a set of facts and a set of and clearly established precedent that addresses excluding a member from a public forum and retaliating against them to kick them off because of their viewpoint. So we get down to this question ultimately of whether or not the social media was a public forum. And bearing in mind, of course, that Knight is vacated, we're saying that essentially that their analysis there is persuasive still to this situation. And what it does is it applies it to other situations not Facebook related and ties the great body of case law regarding excluding somebody from a public forum and retaliating against them because of their viewpoint to this new modern way of conducting a town hall. And I have to take...
Let me interrupt you. If we were to say, we agree with you, the Second Circuit is directly on point, that still wouldn't be enough, would it? For it to be clearly established in the Tenth Circuit?
So that's where I'm getting to as then that the Knight decision ties back to other decisions, going back to other Supreme Court decisions and relies on those. And it ties a string between what's in the present to this great body of case law in the past. And the only distinction between that great body of case law regarding excluding somebody from a town hall or from a parade or whatever else you might find in U.S. Supreme Court precedent, is this distinction regarding social media. So what the appellants here are asking the court to do is to ignore that great body of case law regarding a different type of deal and say that it's this small distinction about the type of forum that changes the analysis and makes it so that you ignore the great weight of the case law that comes before from both the Supreme Court and many other circuits.
But isn't that what the Supreme Court has told us? I mean, I understand that it can be frustrating when you have general principles of the law that you think should be applied in look like analogous situations. But the Supreme Court over and over again has said that you can't look at that level of generality. You have to bring it down to particularized application. And we just don't have that here. Even, I mean, your Davidson versus Randall case, I mean, you're talking about a page that was opened as Chair Phillips J. Randall and designated as a government official page. And in Robinson versus Hunt City, it was, in fact, the Facebook page maintained by the Hunt County Service, the Sheriff's Office. So those cases, to me, aren't even relevant here.
And you know, I have to disagree. And part of that comes from the representations about the facts that Mr. Shaner gave. Those are not accurate. Those aren't reflected in the complaint either. Mr. Griffin did identify himself on his Facebook page. He didn't do it in the about section, but he repeatedly identified himself as a county commissioner on his Facebook page. And he talked about county business. In fact, the very posts that were requested from the county as part of the public records request were a post about a county commission meeting that Commissioner Griffin posted in, and then in the comment section invited the public to talk about the county's business at a county commission meeting. He conducted a town hall about county business. Yes, Judge, sorry.
What about Chief Judge Temkovich's point that this isn't a county commission meeting? This is one county commissioner who is speaking. And one thing county commissioners are always doing, at least my experience, is trying to get reelected. And so a lot of these things, a lot of these comments and everything else are to supporters. And I suppose most of them could be prefaced. And come November, I want you to remember that here was my position. That's not county business. That if that were a campaign meeting, the county commissioner would be entirely free to kick anyone out of the meeting and would not be required to solicit input or anything else. Seems like it's more that than the county commission meeting to me, but could you speak to that, please?
Yes, Your Honor, that's a good point. So Otero County, I would disagree with the concept that they are more executive than legislative. The county acts through ordinances and through passing resolutions. They don't really have quote unquote enforcement authority. They really have a legislative. So it is more like a legislator. But imagine that you have a legislature that allows public comment at every meeting, and they allow the public to show up and express what they want to hear about public business. And then that same legislator takes out an about legislative initiatives, goes out to the public and says, I'm also going to continue to take that public comment. He does have the authority to do that we grant to our county commissioners the authority to conduct these town halls about town business. It may be tied to how well he does address public concerns to whether or not he should get reelected. But this wasn't prefaced as some sort of campaign event. This was prefaced as a town hall about town business or a county business, a county hall about county business, so to speak. So there's a distinction there, whereas he does have the authority to conduct these town halls and to open a public forum for the public to come talk about the business before the county. And I think that's different than it just being some sort of campaign town hall.
County commissioner or a candidate, hold a town hall or a rally at a hotel and regulate who gets in?
They can. And if they do so, as he did in his capacity as a county commissioner, says, hey, I'm a county commissioner, come talk to me about county business. And then somebody shows up at the door, or they go into the meeting and they say, hey, I don't like the job you're doing as county commissioner. And Mr. Griffin kicks them out of the meeting. That's what I'm saying would be the great way to precedent, that he's literally discriminating against them on the basis of their viewpoint to exclude them from the public forum. That's precisely what we're arguing in this case.
Doesn't it matter that there should be some kind of government control over the platform? And here, you know, Facebook is an entirely private entity. It's really maybe more like a newspaper, more like a newsletter, you know, more like a letters to the editor. And, you know, Griffin doesn't have any control over Facebook. In fact, he could be blocked from using Facebook unilaterally at any time. That doesn't look much like a public forum in the traditional sense.
Well, Your Honor, I would argue that Facebook is more like the public forum we're using to conduct these oral arguments right now. This is a private company that owns Zoom that's allowing us to be on here. They could theoretically tell the United States government, no, we're not going to allow the court to use that. Does that mean that the court doesn't have control over Zoom in this instance, such that it's somehow distinguishable from Facebook? I think it's the same thing. And the hotel analogy is great for that, right? So if Commissioner Griffin rents out a hotel room, he doesn't own the hotel. The hotel could kick him out, but for the purposes of the time period where the forum is conducted, he has what's called a lessee's or a leaseholder's interest in that property to exclude somebody from it. It's the same thing with Facebook. Essentially, you're taking a lease.
Why couldn't he rent the hotel room and limit access to supporters?
He could, provided it's not an invitation to come talk about public business and to offer him public comment about the public's business. And that's the distinction between that Judge Phillips, I think, has touched upon. Corey Griffin didn't say, hey, this is a campaign event. He said, this is the work I'm doing as county commissioner. Come talk to me about the work I'm doing as a county commissioner.
Could Griffin block people who access the Facebook page if they... you know, if they use defamatory language or vulgar language, harassing language, could he block people from access for those reasons?
Sure. Same as in a county commission meeting, he could ask to have somebody removed from a county commission meeting because they were acting or behaving that way. That when you exceed the boundaries of your First Amendment speech, it's understood that the government at that point can regulate that without running afoul of your First Amendment rights. I think what I would point to is both the two cases from the fourth and the fifth. And I would really like to kind of harp on a little bit the point that those are cases that discuss Facebook, and they tie it back to this other body of law. It's not just Knight that we are relying on, as the reply seems to say, but we think that those two cases provide a framework for the analysis that as long as, and I think it is, I would agree with Mr. Shaner, it's a factual basis that has to be looked at. And at the state.
With regard to Davidson, one thing that I found significant is that there was no qualified immunity argument pursued in the Fourth Circuit. And so they didn't have the question whether it was clearly established. And in fact, they sort of hinted that if the argument had made, they would have ruled on it because they indicated that the law is in flux and we really don't know where it's going. You know, isn't that a huge difference that nobody made the argument, qualified immunity there?
Well, Your Honor, as we all understand with the body of qualified immunity law that's out there, there's this overarching question with qualified immunity as to how do we get the door back open in certain situations. And I think that's essentially what this does, is while that case can't rely on a great body of evidence beyond, it's applying this and it's opening that door further. And so at some point, we have to allow some of these causes of action for violation of constitutional rights to get back in. That it didn't get capped off at some point soon after Harlow. That there has to be at some point where we are able to open the door and address other constitutional violations that are not so particularized that they're the exact same facts, where it's a Facebook forum on a private Facebook page. there has to be some amount of ability. And I think the Supreme Court's been clear on that, that it's not this, the door is shut for forever type of thing. What we're talking about is drawing that line back to the larger body of case law, using the cases, including Knight, to say that this is tied to that great body of case law, and it is particularized enough to allow this case to go forward.
Can I come back to the question I asked Mr. Shaner, and that is how could Mr. Griffin conduct official business through his Facebook page when he's a member of a multi-member, you know, collegial legislative type body? I'm, his opinions are his own, and they don't really have any force of law, and, you know, really don't officially conduct county business at all.
Because the county has no ability to regulate his speech, right? He's part of that body. They don't take responsibility for what he says. He's a member of that body. And since they can't say you can't say this, or they don't say you should say this, and they don't even, I believe they don't even have their own Facebook page, but he's speaking and he's allowed to speak. He's authorized by them to speak with his official position, and he's allowed to say their official position because they don't have a policy on that. He's allowed to say this is the official position. They can disagree with him publicly and say, no, we don't agree with that position, but there's no regulation amongst these county commissioners. So when he speaks for the body. If he says, I'm a county commissioner and this is what I think we should do for the county.
That's just like a press release. The authority.
I'm sorry, Judge.
It'd be just like a press release or, you know, a speech to the Rotary Club.
It could be, but imagine if President Trump had been conducting a press conference instead of using Twitter, and he had told, I believe this at some point came up, CNN, you're not allowed to come to my press conferences anymore. You're not allowed to come into the White House press briefings because I don't like CNN. And he completely booted them out and wouldn't let them come in because he disagreed with their criticisms of him doing his job. I think we'd have some concerns that a president conducting a press conference that excludes certain people from the public from his press conferences based upon their viewpoint, we'd probably have a problem with that.
You don't think there's a difference between an executive official that does have the ability to announce and conduct official business through social media, perhaps like the president, versus a legislative person, you know, 535 members of Congress, each with its own Facebook page. Neither one of them has the ability to conduct official business in the sense of binding the collective body to any particular issue.
If minority leader, communication. But if minority leader McConnell uses one of the rooms in the United States Senate or in Congress somewhere to conduct a press conference to talk about a bill, and it's the same thing. He says, well, I'm excluding CNN from the minority's press conference on this important piece of legislation because I don't like the way CNN has treated Republicans, it would be the same problem. I don't think that excuses just because in that situation, he's not voting. It's still him using his authority as a government official to exclude a viewpoint and to retaliate against someone. And that, I think that's the larger context.
What about Facebook's predecessor, namely the corner booth at the local coffee shop? Is the difference just that Facebook has so many more people?
I think the distinction is a good one, Judge Phillips, but I think Facebook is scalable, right? And that's important. If you're having a private conversation or a closed conversation on a, for instance, you don't have a public Facebook page like Mr. Griffin did here, and all you're doing is convening with your friends on Facebook to talk about that might be more of a coffee shop type of corner thing where it makes sense that you could exclude somebody from that. That's not what we have here. We have the full blown, this is public. Anybody can see it. Anybody can chime in except for the people he excludes, town hall type of thing. So I think Facebook's an interesting medium because it does allow for this scalable. What happened here though, is not this small scale coffee size. It's the full blown town hall about town business.
All right, I think your time's expired. Mr. Shaner, you had some rebuttal time still.
Thank you, Judge. The appellee spends most of the time in the brief and in this oral argument giving analogies like a town hall or a public meeting at a hotel And one of the, and all those points go to the first prong of whether this is a public forum. The appellee does not respond to Judge McHugh's question about how is this clearly established. All that is said in response is that once we establish there is a constitutional right, it's tied to this bigger body, larger body of law. And that was quoted several times to this court. And that's precisely what the Supreme Court in White said you can't do. And that's exactly why they granted cert on a case that involved qualified immunity, where there has been extensive litigation, because they're saying we've found in the last 5 years that we've had to reverse decisions because courts are interpreting clearly established at a high level of generality. And they issue this opinion for the sole purpose of saying that's not the standard. That's not how this is done. And even in the context of the White case, I mean, there can't be a larger body of law than excessive force involving police. And
don't we have a chicken or egg problem here? Then how's a plaintiff ever going to get over clearly established for social media under your interpretation?
Because I think there is going to be an evolving law that goes up that ultimately recognizes that someone has a constitutional right that's protected in the context of a private Facebook page. But, you know, the way that qualified immunity is determined is at the time. So we're actually going back to 2019, 2020. And even at 2022, as Judge McHugh notes, there isn't a consensus of authority in any of the circuits. There's no 10th Circuit case law. There's no United States Supreme Court. And certainly back in 2019, when these actions were alleged to have occurred, or when they occurred in blocking, there's not any type of clearly established authority. The reason for the clearly established is so that the public official is on notice that their actions are unlawful, and that it's so clear that anybody but the incompetent or the person intentionally violating the law is going to be on notice. There's not anything that the plaintiff appellee can point to that would tell a county commissioner, an individual who happens to be a county commissioner who has a Facebook private profile, that by blocking someone's comments, they're violating someone's First Amendment rights. So we would say that the district court erred in denying qualified immunity, and we'd ask the court to reverse.
All right, counsel, appreciate your arguments. You're excused. The case shall be submitted.